Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free. There'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast. One of the first WhatsApp messages I got after the game yesterday as we record this was from Matthew saying, "When's the podcast?" So I thought I'd better make the time right for Matthew to come on with Andrew and I to talk about the game yesterday as we are recording and whenever it is that you're listening to this. And obviously, there was it's on the verge of what was worse, what's going on in the Middle East or what happened on the pitch afterwards, if you read some of the media commentary today. So we'll cover that, but we'll cover the game first. So, Matthew, since you were the one that said, "When's the podcast?" I assume you enjoyed the outcome of the game yesterday.
Fantastic. The whole day was brilliant. It was. I mean, we can pick individual faults, we can, and all the rest of it. But I think the reality is, you know, if you go back, just a couple of weeks, you know, I think with, you know, especially probably in particular in the aftermath of getting beat from Hibs, you know, there was a sense that, oh, that's it, the season's over. You know, we've got four away games coming up in a row. We're going to be lucky if we avoid defeat in any of them. You know, well, Rangers are going to beat us. They're going to beat us at Ibrox. They're going to beat us in the Cup. They're going to go on and win it, and it's a disaster, and woe is us.
That was just me as well, Matthew.
Absolutely. But the thing is, you know, think about that. And yet, you fast forward to where you were. Let's be even honest. I think it was a strange start to the morning, because I think after we drew the league game the week before, I think a lot of people were really optimistic. In fact, I would have actually said the majority of Celtic fans I knew, which isn't always the case, but the majority of Celtic fans I knew were really optimistic going into Sunday. And then the team came out, and suddenly there was this evaporation of the number of messages.
That was just me.
But the number of messages I got from guys going, "I might just stay at home. I don't know if I actually want to go out. You know, I don't want to go and see them." I wasn't that, you know, I still went in, but I was really, you know, I don't know what I was expecting, to be honest. Especially when I saw the team, I did have a sense of, oh, equally, as somebody pointed out, you know, they were talking about, you know, the Scott Bain debut game is the classic example of, you know, like, it's that, I know it's a bit of a cliche, but the idea, you know, diamonds are created under extreme pressure. And so that was exactly it. In the end, it was brilliant. It was, the thing is, it was genuinely, I'm not saying it was high on quality, but it was actually a really interesting game. You know, there wasn't massive amounts in it. Rangers had more of the ball overall, didn't really create anything. There was genuine excitement without, as I say, any particular quality. And penalties were great. It was just brilliant. And I think it is remarkable that for a team, Celtic, who are so bad at penalties in a normal game, the way that, against Rangers at least, the last couple, we've just been, you know, excellent. What is that? 9 out of 9 penalty shootouts or goals against Jack Butland, which, given that he's got a not bad record of saving, is brilliant. But no, it was just a great, great day yesterday. I mean, I know there's less savoury parts that we'll come to later, but if you talk about the football, brilliant.
Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, the outcome was great. Although I must admit, I really did fear my ticker wasn't going to make it. I mean, me and my brother's not long since he's had a mini stroke. Like, genuinely was feeling ill. Genuinely was feeling ill when those penalties were coming up. I think he was sitting down. I thought he was going to get his rosaries out, like my brother, like at one point. All about the penalties. But do you know, you're a heathen, Brian, so you probably wouldn't have been at Mass, but Matthew, was at Mass yesterday. But
see the, I'm see just the, lapsed, see the first, Andrew. I'm just lapsed.
See, the first reading. The first reading is about, like, Moses says to God, "There's no water anywhere," and all that, and God says, "Tap the rock." So Moses taps the rock, and this, the water of life comes out. I somehow think Martinelli's tapping the rock of this squad. He's getting something to flow. I mean, when you think about it, this squad is, and that team yesterday, made up of so many unattractive parts that and they're just stuck together with this kind of sticking plaster that is Martin O'Neill. That's it. I mean, I must admit, it wasn't edifying to watch Celtic. I've watched Rangers play that way against Celtic many a time. They can't string together three passes. But you don't often see that of Celtic against Rangers. You don't often say they look as if they're out playing Celtic. They're a better football team. So, but I mean, it was a phenomenal defensive display. Every single one of them. I mean, you could even go for Arthur to Murray. Not a one of them. They hardly put a foot wrong. Any of the six players that were used in defence. It was incredible. And even your man. And he was showing his biomechanics weren't that bad, Brian, because there was a couple of times Scales was doing that kind of, you know, the half turn, the Hatate half turn. And he was getting away with it. He wasn't losing the ball or anything. Much better on the ball than, I mean, he's 10 times the player McManus was, which refers to a WhatsApp chat we had early yesterday, Sunday.
Well, one of the things on that, I thought trusty Matthew had a brilliant game. And actually, if you think about Trusty's best games, I don't know if you agree with me, in a Celtic jersey, they have been the games, put that Dundee game aside where Brendan called him weak as piss, they've actually been games where his job has been to just defend, like Champions League last season and games against Rangers. And the fact that he stepped up to take a penalty, he actually looks to me like he's growing into... I'm the leader of this defence. Do you agree?
Yeah. I thought there was a few players that, on a day that, as Andrew says, you know, we can pick apart lots of problems, but on a day that there was many, from a defensive perspective, were outstanding. Yeah, I think Trusty, I'm basically torn between Sinisalo and Trusty as man of the match. I thought Sinisalo was excellent. I thought he really, really showed confidence that one when he rushed out his goal, you know, when really it looked to be, you know, I can't remember which Rangers player was through one-on-one, was just absolutely brilliant. He just looked commanding. You know, he was confident. He was coming for things. I thought he was excellent. And I thought Trusty was exactly the same. And I think you're absolutely right. I think this is a conversation that we've had in the past before, but I think at times we have a habit of signing players that do something. And then when they come here saying, let's do something completely different. I mean, I always thought, I know it was a bit of a disaster in the end, but Duffy, you know, in the COVID season was another example of, and to some extent, Trusty's been on this way. We send guys who are just big defenders. They're not ball players necessarily. You know, they are often being signed from teams that are under pressure, you know, and they're used to that. They're used to balls being flung in the box. They're used to throwing their body in the way. They're used to, you know, clearances. And then it's obviously very different when you come to Celtic because, you know, in most games, I know this season's been a bit different for different reasons, but in the bulk of games, you're pressing. And so we expect our defenders to play out from the back. We're asking them to be ready to not get caught on the break, which is not the same as if you're just a big defender that's used to clearing things. So naturally, I think Trusty is going to stand out in games when you're just defending. As it was yesterday, everything they flung in the box, Arthur as well, I just thought, you know, they were throwing themselves in front of it. There was a real desire and a commitment. And I think the icing on the cake, as it were, and it's what you alluded to, I think it was taking the penalty. I like when players have the confidence to take a penalty. And it was just the fact yesterday, all our penalties were brilliant. And like Andrew said, you know, let's be honest, I watched it at a friend's house, the game. I mean, penalties, I really wasn't especially confident. I just think given our, you know, in-game record with penalties, I just thought, no, this is going to be a disaster. Thinking back to Hitati last week, you know, like with third bite at the cherry, finally scoring. And they were all great, you know, every single one of them. Keeper absolutely nowhere near them. Just really, really perfectly done. So I thought, as I say, I thought the whole team showed a real commitment. Yeah, we can debate the quality, especially in the sort of the final third of the park. But defensively, they were great. Trusty, as you say, really, really showed what he can do in a defensive game. And I thought that was great. But as I say, I really am. We can be negative and there'll be other, you know, there's other aspects of it we're going to talk about. But the reality is, I thought it was great. Going there twice in 8 days, undefeated, through in the next round. Brilliant.
Yeah, Yeah, especially with Celtic's recent record at Ibrox. You could not hardly have envisaged that. Yeah, you know, it's like, and what makes it extra great, I know you talked about this in your monopod, Brian, but what makes it extra great, there was a shot just after they cleared most of the pitch of the, what was that I saw? The best one I saw was the Kendo Nagasaki Loyal, somebody called them.
One for the kids, Matthew won't get that.
Do you get that, Matthew?
He's frozen. Hey, carry on.
Do you get that? Like, you got it anyway. But was the there's a shot of Kavanagh, Andrew Kavanagh, and you just saw him ashen-faced, and you thought, and somebody said, yo, he won't be happy at these scenes and da-da-da. No, what he won't be happy is they've spent $42 million on, they've maxed out, they've spent $42 million on this squad. Twice they've come up against Martin O'Neill, Septuagenarian Martin O'Neill, like, yeah. In the Cups, both times they've lost. You know, yesterday week, Celtic conceivably having seven, even if you want to say Schmeichel for Sinisalo, conceivably 80, what was the first choice, what they would consider their first choice team a couple of weeks ago. Like, and they still can't get through it. And they think, well, where are we getting our next tranche of money? Because we need to go again. Astonishing.
And so...
We lost you there for a bit, Matthew.
I couldn't decide if you two disappeared or if it was me.
No, either that or you were bored out of your noggin and just stared and going, when's he going to shut up?
I wasn't sure because I've seen him like that some of my answers before.
But on to the game. So the first real, obviously there's incidents of our players getting caught in possession, but the first real major talking point is the offside goal. And we all thought it was offside. The only caveat I would put to that is we also thought Negrin's goal midweek was offside. But the most bizarre thing about that is the line drawing.
Don't know.
Is it just me, Matthew, or are they just... Did they just go, do you know what, that's too difficult? Everybody knows it's offside, so just stick a red and a blue line in and it'll be fine.
Do you know what? That was almost my exact thought. I mean, there's so many reasons to criticise VAR. They find, even on the days when they get it right, they still find some sort of way to not get it right. The reality was, yeah, it was definitely offside. I'll be honest with you. I was cursing Scales throughout because I was like, as the attacker, why are you on the goal side of the defender? That's insanity. And I know it was only his trailing foot, but to be honest, we knew straight away. We sort of jumped when the goal went in. And the minute they showed the first replay, which wasn't focusing on the offside, they were just showing it as, this is a perfectly good goal. The people that we were all with all looked at each other and we all went, that's offside. Like, you can see his foot. You can see that his leg... It's clearly, and the only thing I couldn't remember when it was one of those ones I'd put it out in my head. I couldn't remember who'd headed the ball over to Maeda in that split second. And because the minute when he went to cross it and you could see where Scales was, I thought, oh God, I hope he didn't header this. Because, you know, then obviously at that point, and then clearly he did. And the minute he did, you knew it was going to be offside. It definitely was offside. The lines were bizarre. I mean, we know he's offside. As you say, Brian, it came across exactly like that. It came across as, in, this is a bit footery. This is going to be a bit tricky. Okay, it doesn't matter. We know we've made the right decision. Screw it. But no, it was clearly substantially closer than those lines would do. And actually, they'd have been better just not issuing anything. They'd have been better just saying he's offside. The leg's trailing. We could all see it on, like, if you're watching Sky or Premier Sports or whatever it was. We could all see it anyway. So I don't think anybody... This wasn't one of those ones where people really needed the lines. But to put out something that just was miles away from reality, just insanity.
You went into a presentation from the SFE about VAR and lines and all that stuff, didn't you, Andrew?
Yeah.
So can you make sense of what those lines are? Because, I mean, they just... There's nothing about them that makes sense.
It actually isn't a line. It's like there was a Ranger spot that had a laser that he was shining through the home players to make sure they were in line and make sure they were just in front of his Scales. Because I actually did my own wee bit, and I wasn't putting it out on Twitter or anything, but I did the, from Sterling's T-shirt line, I did my dots down to the pitch. You know, that's the way they're supposed to do it. I don't know why they didn't do it. They're supposed to do that. So I did my dots down the pitch, and it's very close. But I still had Scales by half a toe offside. But, I mean, I'm not doing it on a computer and all that. This is me doing it.
I know, but It's just so bizarre. I just found the line so bizarre.
Why does it not come from his T-shirt line go down? I don't know why.
It's just a blue line across the pitch. I mean, there's no correlation between any Rangers player and that line. It's just bizarre. And
is that definitely from... Because you know how sometimes, and that was happening in the early days, and they actually said to us, and I went to a couple of VAR presentations, but in the early days, it was the TV were producing their own. I wondered if that was indeed from Clydesdale House or was it just Premier Sports? Because you think about how kind of, I like them and all that, but they're pretty two-bit, Premier Sports. You could see them, oh, fuck it, we'll just draw a line. we'll just say it's for them.
Yeah, your point about it being two-bit, they obviously didn't have a very well-sound insulated booth for the pre-game and half-time chat. Because you couldn't hear them.
No.
All you could hear was the noise from the fans outside. Then the next major controversy is Rangers score. And it's chopped off. Actually, for me, that was also a bit like Matthew says. Straight away, as soon as you see the first replay, you go, oh, that's okay. Because actually, the first thing he does, he heads onto that arm first. There's actually two handballs.
It was actually, I think the only question was, which one of the handballs did you want to chop the goal off for? There was no question there was multiple handballs.
Yeah.
The only question was which one was going to ensure the goal was ruled out. I have to say as well, Tavernier did the thing that I really, really hate. See this, I understand why players do it amongst themselves, and I don't mean the controversy recently with Real Madrid. I understand from a tactical perspective this whole doing this. See, Tavernier's going up to the referee and doing that. I actually think it should be a booking. I think straight away, if you're, I'm actually not even joking in the slightest. I don't mean book Tavernier randomly. I think as a rule in football, if you're going up to the referee and doing this, that means, I think it's reasonable for the people who are watching it to assume you're currently saying something to the referee that you don't want the world to see. Because, you know, you're doing is going up to the referee and saying, I don't think that was handball, ref. Well, you can just say that. You don't have to. There's no mystical aspect to that. So if you're going up to the referee like that, and this isn't, to be honest, this isn't just an issue of Tavernier yesterday, because I know it's not a rule. I personally am of the view that it should be. It should just be an automatic. If you're on the park, maybe it's like, unless you're speaking to a teammate, if you're doing this, straight away yellow card, and especially a referee.
It's a fair point, because your man at Real Madrid, you know, because he was speaking to Vinicius Jr. and then he did that. So they said, why would he be speaking to him? And then suddenly, it's exactly what you're talking about there. But I watched the rugby on Saturday and my wife came through just as I was watching. She said, that's amazing to hear. She says, I'm loving this, hearing the referee articulate exactly why he makes decisions. You know, he was articulating to the French, you're giving away too many penalties. You're going to cause yourselves a lot of problems here if you keep doing this. Someday will be sin binned. So he's actually... He's thinking ahead to what could happen in the game. He's almost trying to help them stay within the rules. I mean, I don't know if referees would get that way in football, but it's incredible.
I mean, I think in fairness, I mean, I had one or two friends, not at a senior level, but referee, and I've seen like senior referees talk about this before, because I think occasionally it gets picked up and people read into it as, oh, there's some conspiracy.
Trying to
help. I
think
on occasion, there's been occasions where a referee has sort of said, look, number six, if I speak to you again, that's you going in the book. Not in a formal talking to, but just in the passing. And then people pick that up and complain, well, you shouldn't be doing that. And actually, I think from the very lowest level down, I mean, even with my own kids playing football, you do often see referees, like, commentating games.
That's true. That's true.
Out, like, number 12, you've spoke to me twice. If you speak to me again,
that's
you're getting
true.
Good.
Was there not an incident at Ibrox that everybody, Celtic fans, were getting all paranoid about, where a ref was shouting, don't foul him, don't foul him, don't foul him, and then he fouls him. And the ref, at the time, the refs were saying, because that's what they do, like, he could see that as he's catching up, he's likely to put in a foul, and the referee's trying to say to him, don't do that because I'm going to have to book you.
Yeah.
Which...
Yeah.
And we'll get into the trouble in a minute. I've spoken to a few people who are at the game, and they said a lot of the issues started around the Rangers chopped off goal, because Rangers fans came over out of their seats.
Well, yeah, my friends that were there were saying that, yep.
When they scored that goal, that Raskin was making the wanker sign to the Celtic fans at their goal, obviously. And this is the thing that gets me with VAR. It was his face, Fernandez. knew that he'd put the ball, he knew that he'd hit the ball into the back of the
no,
net.
No, I know. Why is he running away and doing all this? And,
he like, knows. I mean, with VAR, this is the thing.
Maybe he's thinking, it's Scottish VAR. I've still got a chance.
With VAR, he must know. Because no matter how accidental that is, he put the ball into the back of the net with his hand.
It was a great feeling in our living room, but because like you say, the one, as soon as we saw it again, we went, oh, that's fine.
Absolutely. My, do you know the only worry I'd had, the first, because the minute when we saw the first replay after it, again, universally around us, everyone was like, that's handball. The only worry I'd had, and I couldn't quite fathom, was I couldn't work out where he'd hit it with his hand in the sense of if it was already over the line. Like, just because the first angle we saw, just the angle, yeah. I had the worry that if that ball's already over the line and then it's going in, then obviously the goal could feasibly still be given. But yeah, when you watch it, there's no, as you say, celebrate. I suppose in fairness, you're always told as a footballer, claim for everything. And if you don't get it, well, you don't get it. But, you know, if you know, clearly if, I know we've got VAR anyway, but if Fernandez stands up straight away and goes, sorry, lads, you know, that was a handball, then it doesn't change the outcome. But, you know, he probably is getting into trouble from his manager on the grounds of no one commends you for honesty at this level.
Yeah, you still see that in cricket occasionally, don't you, Brian? Batsmen just walk. I've seen batsmen, even recently, I've seen batsmen walking and there wasn't a claim. The other side didn't hear the nick. The batsman heard it. Who was that recently? And people were going, should you really have done that? Was it an Australian player or something?
I mean, when I played, I went down the route of, there'll be times I'm giving out when I'm not. I'm not going to walk until the umpire gives it, which was quite often. So, for me, one of the next talking points is, why wasn't Sterling given a second yellow card?
What, for the foul at one point?
So he gets a yellow card.
And foul?
He gets a foul in like 2-3 minutes and he gets a yellow card. And then, I can't remember if it was right before full time or it was in extra time. He, just before the break, he absolutely halves one of the Celtic players who, at the halfway line, at the side of the pitch.
Yeah, I do remember the one you're talking
like,
about.
Like, really halves him. Second yellow card.
And actually, was it not within seconds almost of that, Hitati did something at the very least as the same?
I think Hitati
got booked.
And got booked. I think Hitati did a wee tug back on somebody or something and got booked.
It was very similar to before. No, I agree. At the time we did say Sterling's on a booking. To me, that's another booking that he's, you know, for the foul he's committed there. Oh, do you know what? I'm glad he stayed on because it means they've got less to complain about or anything along those lines.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, anything. It's a bit like yesterday. People sort of say, it'd be good if this had happened, it'd be good if that. No, it wouldn't, because yesterday's outcome was perfect. If you go back and change something, the only thing, you know, if you could sort of time machine go back to a moment in the game and change it, the only thing you potentially do is change the outcome. And I was perfectly happy with the outcome. So
before we get on to the outcome of the penalties, let's just have a quick overview of, I'm not wanting to cry the performance, but my goodness me, Mvuka, not sure what he brings, Shivanchara, if he's a guy to hold up play, there was a point where the ball carried about 80 yards through the air and he misjudged it and it landed behind him. If you're there to hold the ball up, get
the ball. Mvuka wasn't all bad yesterday. I mean, I'm not saying he looked up, but all this competition win and all that, people just made their minds up about him. See, actually, the one move Celtic had that was five passes and it was progressing up the side of the pitch, it was right at the end.
Yeah,
Mvuka was right in the middle of that. He was right in the heart of that. I think he was playing passes with, who was it he was playing passes with? Was it Forrest or something that come across?
Forrest came across as well.
That was at the end.
And we got the throw-in and then Robertson blew.
Then wasn't allowed to take it. But that was about one of the few really constructive moves that Celtic had. I mean, he made it, it's hard, but it's, you can tell he's a guy that's got no confidence. He's not going to have any confidence. You can tell he's a guy who's fearful about things going wrong.
I think the problem is, though, if you're a guy that has no confidence, then coming on loan to a team that are having problems, you know, and when you're getting to, you know, very much as the old saying, you know, the business end of the season. I mean, that's one of the things that makes you a good footballer. you know, it's good being a good footballer isn't just about being able to do keepy-uppies or anything like that. Part of being a good footballer, even if you're not the most technically gifted, is having the mentality for it. It's not getting put off. I mean, I always liked, one of the reasons I always liked Samaras was the simple reason that seeing games when it wasn't going well for him, seeing games when the fans were getting on his back, he never hid.
You know, he never had. Sometimes you wanted him to hide, but...
Well, you might want to hide, but he didn't. No, I'm joking. One of these guys that would actually, you know, would be like, do you know what, I'm just going to stand slightly to the left and then the ball won't come anywhere near me. Then no one can blame me. He was somebody who kept trying. And I think the reality is if you want to be... Nobody's saying that Mvuka's going to play for Real Madrid or, you know, or anything like that. But if you want to play... If you want to play football at any level, you need a level of confidence. But if you want to play at, you know, a senior professional level, you have to be willing. You have to have a belief in yourself.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then unfortunately, and no harm to him, but if you don't, well, you're not going to be.
He wasn't any good, but he wasn't alone. And it was very hard. Sometimes it's hard coming into the game. I mean, what did Yang and
Tanecki?
I've really gone off it when I thought...
Well, Tanecki's a sub. For me, Tanecki, we talked about this before, Andrew, in the podcast before, that Tanecki's like Tori Andre Flo was at Chelsea, or, God, who was the super sub for Liverpool in the
70s? Ian Barraclough, was it Barraclough?
No. Anyway.
The best super sub is surely Solskjaer, Man United.
Well, Solskjaer, but these players who... They're great coming on as a sub, and then somebody says they should be starting, and then they start, and they just don't deliver starting.
I agree. I think Tanecki is absolutely an impact player, and he's not a starting one. I would be playing him every single week, but not until about the 60th minute, because I think the games when he's most impressed, when he's most think he's had an impact on the game, is coming off the bench. And like you say, Brian, you know, to me, I just think when he starts, he's what he is, but he's not, whether it's because he's not fresh enough, whether it's because, you know, whether he needs that to the advantage of taking on a fullback that's been playing for the previous hour, you know, because when he's got that extra, you know, that extra burst of energy. But yeah, I agree. Tanecki's not somebody who...
You have to play Maeda through the middle. Maeda was a bit more like himself in terms of the work rate and the energy. And really, he was giving them something to think about. I mean, he almost got one of those. He forced one mistake from Butland, and there was a couple of other ones. He's got to start through the middle. He's got to be the man for, which is not ideal, because then he can't play instead of like Yang or Tanecki.
And the other thing is, Mvuka is a right winger, and we came on to play on the left, and we played Forrest on the right. So there's also that to take into consideration.
My earlier point about square pegs and round holes and our ability to get people that do one thing and ask them to do something different.
So let's get on to the penalties. So obviously we had Gilles Jourdet on the podcast about a year ago, and he's written the book. And I know for certain that Celtic coaching staff under Rodgers read that book and adopted everything. And the thing that really struck me about the May Cup final, which sort of my whole perception of the way we approached the May Cup final was that we weren't as prepared as we normally would be, because this is going to be piss easy. And it was demonstrated by, I thought, we didn't do all the things that we've been doing of late on penalties, you know, like in-game penalties. We saw it at Ibrox last week where the non-penalty taker, somebody's designated to take the ball, the penalty taker gets out of the box, he goes and stands on the spot. That is all from Gilles Jourdet's book. But the other thing is, what you do in a penalty shootout is also in his book, and he was on the podcast about it. And we did it for the cup, the game against Rangers in the cup semi-final, but we didn't do it against Aberdeen, but we did it again this time. And one of the most important things is, first thing that happens after they take a penalty that I noticed, Sinisalo goes and gets the ball. Yeah. And then he goes and meets the Celtic player coming from the halfway line, so that player doesn't have the eternal walk from the halfway line down to the ball. He's meeting a teammate halfway, and the teammate's got the ball. It's all about minimising the stress on the player. And we
I love
all
these
that.
Wee things. And I'll tell you something. Yeah, I'll tell you something else. Sinisalo was shouting at every one of their penalty takers. He was sledging them. Did you not notice that? He was sledging every one of them. He was shouting at them. And he didn't have his hand over his mouth. You'll be pleased to know, Matthew, he didn't care the world. It was a bit like Araujo when he was, he didn't bother, did he? Even though when you look at it and somebody's lip read it, you know what I mean? It's, you get to fuck, you get to fuck, you get to fuck. Then he goes about two steps away, fuck off, fuck off, fuck off. He didn't put his hand up at all. He was too busy pointing.
I'd like to see a bit of honesty.
Yeah.
No, I thought this thing that struck me with the penalties yesterday, and one of my friends, or a guy at work, that his theory on it today was, I thought all their players looked terrified.
They did.
Having Gassama, especially, knew Gassama was way to miss. I'm always at penalty shootouts, I'm always the pessimist. I'm always, they're going to score, we're going to miss every time, is what is in my head. And when Gassama got it, I said he's way to miss. He looked utterly terrified. He didn't look confident. He looked like he wanted to be anywhere else in the world. And given that he was only the fourth penalty taker, I can understand if you get through to the eighth or the ninth, you know, if you've gone to sudden death, you can understand that. But he just looked like, this is absolutely what I don't want to do. And it's almost the reverse. I was, you know, we said earlier, it was great that Trusty was willing to take a penalty. If I was a Rangers fan, I'd be more annoyed at my, you know, at some of the more experienced players, because, you know, I just thought Gassama did not look confident. And if he was the best they had to be the fourth, what were the rest of them doing? They just looked, we're going to miss. Whereas we were the opposite. And one theory, as I say, the guy I spoke to, his theory on it today was, we were now at the nothing to lose stage. So at the start of the game, you know, mentally, there was a feeling, oh, we've got a cobbled together team.
Yes. We've
had a really bad day today, you know, and we didn't. And then we get to extra time. So you, at least, you know, worst case scenario, you've not lost in normal time. And then you're sort of thinking, well, they've been in the ascendancy in the second half. You know, they've got more of their own team. They've got more fans. This is going to push them over the line. And they didn't, obviously. They had so many chances to win. What was it, 20 shots or something that they had?
24.
Not loads of them on target. But the point was, so by the time it got to penalties, we had an element of, this is all right. Worst case scenario, if we lose now, well, we've not taken the hammer and some people were
expecting.
And
Aberdeen, anyone, and me.
They looked like they'd missed their chance. They looked like a team thinking, we've just battered this team. And which they had for chunks of the game. Maybe not battered, but they'd certainly been on top for lots of the game. And they hadn't scored. And maybe that plays on your head. You know, maybe if you're the team that's been riding your luck, you think, luck's with us today. Whereas if you're the team that's missed all the chances, you must think, we've blown it. And to me, that was what they looked like. They just did not look like a team that wanted to take penalties.
When you think about it as well, when you miss your first one, I think it was Callum McGregor missed the first one in May, didn't he?
Yeah. And we never recovered, you're right.
Never recovered. And Rangers never recovered for that. Because that's what my friend was saying. The most important penalty of that penalty shootout yesterday was Oxlade-Chamberlain. Because you have to press home the advantage. And he did it with aplomb, didn't he? Like he stepped up. The very fact he was willing to be the first penalty taker, stepped up, just swept
again,
away.
Again, in Gears or Debt's book, and anybody can go back and listen to the podcast, penalty number one and penalty number five are the two, should be your two best penalty takers. Because they're the two.
Who was number five for Celtic? Does anybody know? Who would have
I
been
believe
number
five? I believe it was.
I've seen multiple rumours about who it was going to be. I mean, the best would have been, of course, if it had been Araujo and he'd scored the winner and himself into the, you know, launched himself right into the middle of the Union Bears.
He would have been hanging for the girders of the club deck to be three in the morning.
I mean, Shivansha's benefit by that point is there's a bit of pressure taken off him. Because he can afford to miss and we can still...
Well, we had three chances to win. You had three chances to win when Chavanshara stands up. So, I mean, at that point, I mean, again, I know it can go the other way, but as I say, for all my pessimism, when he held the ball, I thought, there's no way we're going to blow three chances. We're either going to score one of the next two or they're going to miss. And, of course, we didn't need to. But no, it was great. It was really... And as you say, a lot of it just looked like we were a club that had planned. It just looked like a club, by the time penalties came, that we were quite content. Whereas, like I say, the psyche for them, especially Gassama, was just, I would like to be anywhere else in the world now.
Prioritised. I noticed...
The pressure was on them. The reality is, Rangers have had a terrible, terrible 8 days. you know, they look, the league, who knows, the league could still go anyway. They're still, you know, it's going to be one of three teams, obviously, and it genuinely could go anyway. You know, I think it's very much that thing of, you know, us and Hearts can have a bad weekend next weekend, and suddenly Rangers are mentally in the ascendancy. Equally, us and Rangers can have a bad one, and Hearts are suddenly, you know, have got extra impetus. So we don't know what's going to happen. But I think them beating us at Ibrox in the league was essential. And then, and don't get me wrong, no disrespect, St Mirren have already beat us at Hampden this season, you know, and there's no guarantee. But realistically, if you look at the three teams, or the four teams, but the three teams who are left, you know, you assumed St Mirren would probably beat Partick Thistle. So Celtic and Rangers were both thinking, and Danny Rowe himself said it, you know, this is your chance of a trophy. This is a huge, huge chance of silverware.
Yeah.
Now, we have to turn up against St Mirren. If we beat St Mirren, we've got to be the right mentality for the final. You presume it'll be Falkirk, but, you know, there's no guarantee that that's what will be the case. But the reality is, we are now very, very close to silverware in a season where, to be honest, we don't entirely deserve it. And there is a big mental boost. Rangers have done the exact opposite on the other hand. They've had two games at home. They expected probably to win both of them. They're 2-0 up in one of them. In another game, they're up against a makeshift Celtic team in a match where they're on top, and they've not won either. And so for all the number of Rangers fans, daft Rangers fans, that go, oh yeah, but they're not very good, they're not very good. The smarter Rangers fans, even guys that I know, will always go, yeah, we keep saying, oh, they're not very good, they're not very good. But continually, we are the ones that find a way to do it when it counts. And that makes a huge difference.
Huge. Another thing that was telling was this team now looks, this Celtic team, whatever their flaws or foibles or shortcomings, they look bonded. Like being in the trenches together, that was one of those ones when you come through it, you know, and your teammates are all putting it in, and all your teammates are putting it in, you know, whether it's just sheer force of will or whatever, when you do that, then that really is like what makes you come together. And even the very fact that they were out last night, they're out together and all that, like there's a deepening bond with the likes of the Arojos. You can tell, even people talk about low and ease and all that, God, it still means everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I think even if you look at our last four games, like in terms of, you know, the away games, I think there is even a practical element. Obviously, I know two of them were in Glasgow, which, you know, there, but the last four games, you've had a European away, you've had obviously Pittodrie, and I am assuming, you know, Celtic, with it being, we're away, you stayed away somewhere, you're on Saturday night, I don't know if it was the usual Eurocentral or wherever they were at. But the point is, there is a bonding element, and bonding works best when not only are you together, but you're together under pressure, but not only together under pressure, but you actually achieve something. You know, it's easy to spend your time with a group of people or anything like that, but actually, it's that sense of achievement. And the reality is, in the last few games, including even the last-minute winners, you know, in the lead-up to that, I know that was before the Hibs game, that was obviously a bit of a bump in the road, as it were, but the reality is that a team that has mentally been written off, and I know everyone will say, well, you've got more money, you've got the best squad, and there's an element of truth to that, but the reality is, they've been written off for much of this season. There has been an assumption they'll be nowhere. They've been multiple managers in. We are, if you count Martin O'Neill's two spells as almost two separate appointments, you know, we're on our fourth sort of managerial position in the season. You've got the uncertainty comes with that. You've got the influx of new players that come into this uncertainty. And yeah, you do need someone to bring you together. Going to Ibrox, last minute, you know, recent last minute wins, two Ibrox games in a row when you fought back from 2-0, that is a huge thing. I think Saturday's game coming up now is absolutely massive.
Yeah, absolutely. But we seem to have lost our main host, did we not? Or is it just me?
That exact thing. No, he's definitely gone. I was expecting a reappearance at some stage.
Yeah, I haven't got my phone on it. No, he's not even been phoning or anything. But we need to cover that. I don't know if you've got a couple of minutes to.
Yeah,
we need to cover what happened. Can I put my tuppence worth in? Start off. I think what really upsets us all, the Celtic supporters, we all concede that he's back. We all concede. Sorry, we were just moving on to the aftermatch, if that's all right.
Yeah.
Right. We all concede. fans shouldn't jump onto the pitch. Although pitch invasions have happened at football games since time immemorial, Dunfermline fans were running onto the pitch the last two cup wins, so there's nothing particularly unusual about that. We see it, we've seen it, as I say, across the entire footballing panoply. But what we don't always see is the reaction to that. People coming onto the field as those Rangers supporters did, intent and getting to the supporters who were over exuberance, as the late Rod Petrie called it. You know, and what we've seen, and what really upsets us, I think, as Celtic supporters, is the false equivalence that then follows us. One's as bad as the other. You guys, like, you poison Scottish football, two cheeks of the same arse. No. No one from outside who was looking at this objectively could say those two groups of supporters were acting in a similar fashion. One was acting out of celebration, one was acting out of menace. I don't think that can be. But the problem is, of course, we want to see Celtic as different. We want to be acknowledged as different, but we're not doing enough. Certain elements of the support are not doing enough not to give people the little crumbs to feast on to say that Celtic are just as bad. The graffiti, the rush in the turnstiles, although that's happened forever and a day. You know, like some of the unsavoury stuff about the chants, the roaming, the gloaming and all that. Because if you're talking about sectarianism, nobody can say that song isn't sectarian. But really, you know, you're not judging. You're not. This two-sidism, it just doesn't wash with me.
No, I think that, look, I'll be honest, do you know what I find weird? I suppose I'm slightly showing my age here, but I hate fans going on the pitch. I do. I've always hated fans going on the pitch. I've been at lots and lots of games when it's happened, and I know, and that's the thing, it's not new. Again, some of the people talking about this, it's not new in the slightest, but I've always hated it. And what I remember more was, that you don't really get as much now, but I remember more going back to the 80s and 90s. See times when people went on, like Celtic supporters, it was often other Celtic fans were booing.
They weren't booing, they used to boo.
I remember times where, you know, people were very much saying, this is the sort of, you know, this is the wrong thing and all the rest of it. So I'll be honest, I don't like fans on the park, and I don't like it for Celtic fans, I don't like it for Rangers, I don't like it for anyone. However, the reality is, it's become this accepted part. And teams do a dramatic win if they score a late goal. As you said, Dunfermline fans were on the pitch. I think increasingly you struggle to see a game, especially with the sort of the rise of the so-called ultras and all the rest of it, you struggle to see a game where you don't get, you know, when it's a dramatic moment where fans don't go on the park. As you say, though, the utter nonsense, like, there is perfectly valid reasons to criticise some Celtic supporters yesterday, but what it's not to do is for being on the park in the way that they were. This thing of, you know, if you read some of the police reports that are talking about, you know, this was two fans intent on fighting. No, it isn't.
No.
This was one set of fans right in front of the goal, and this was another set of fans who came the entirety of the pitch. I keep seeing the fans are exchanging and throwing flares at each other. No, they're not.
Mm-hmm.
The flares are coming from one section into the other. They're not. It's a bit like sort of saying just now that, you know, Iran is exchanging missiles with America. Well, not really. You know, like, the reality is one side is pummeling them. There's nothing going back the other way. And it's exactly the same here. There was no flares being thrown from the Celtic end.
And we are on then.
There was no Celtic supporters going up to the other end. And as you say, the false equivalence of the reality was when they thought they'd scored the winner, they were on the park. Now, are we trying to say, I do actually wonder, look, for some of them, I think for some journalists, it is just the laziness of, you know, both sides of the same coin and all that sort of thing. But the honest answer is, I think there's at least some of the people commenting about both sides that if, when Rangers fans had come on to be the winner, if that had been the winner and Celtic supporters had rushed the park, I'm not quite sure the equivalence would be quite so evident. Like I say, it was an utter nonsense to suggest that Celtic and Rangers fans did the same.
Did we? I know.
One fans came on, they shouldn't be on the park, but one set of fans came on to celebrate, the other set of fans came on to fight. There's no...
I know, you saw it, you're the wee lassie taking a selfie with Martin O'Neill and all that. These were well, I'm going to get these Rangers supporters. And I have to pick you up, Brian, if I may do so, for your monopod. You said it was just like Hibs in 2016. Now, Hibs fans didn't do what Celtic fans did. because I was on the level with 18-yard line where I was sitting that day at the Rangers end. Hibs fans ran past their own players, didn't even celebrate with them because they were running up to goad the Rangers supporters. That's what they did. They ran the 80 yards because I think I've told you.
I think it was more my point that for the Hibs one, it was as much to do with you knew that if Hibs scored, they were going to come on the pitch. Yet it seemed to come as a surprise to the authorities. I mean, the Hibs fans were gathering in the passageways, and they score and they come on, and then with final whistle they come on. Look, there's the Hibs fans.
Yeah.
Who'd have thought 100 years after they've last won a trophy they might come on the pitch?
But what shocked me is they didn't want to celebrate with their players the way that Celtic fans did yesterday. Of course, there would be a wee element of saying, "Oh, we're on the pitch at Ibrox, and you know they've just." Their probably best chance of a trophy is gone and we can lord it up here. But they celebrated with it. That's what Martin Neil said. None of our fans went past the halfway line. Not even close to it.
No, I think there's a maturity thing. Look, it's a bit... There's just the thing that just drives me mad. And look, again, this is not... I am getting at Rangers supporters here, you know, or some Rangers supporters. But actually, there'll be times this is true, what I'm away to see of Celtic fans as well. But do you know what? See if you get beat. Put on your big boy pants, suck it up, and go home. See this crap? It's like these ones. It's whether it, right, we got beat, that they're celebrating, so we're now going to fight them. Or it's like these people that go onto social media, you know, afterwards, and then pick fights with opposing fans. You know, the number of Rangers fans, you know, that have come on, even mine or whatever else, to just complain.
I read a couple today, yeah.
But you just think, this is actually really funny, because this is what you always want to say, because whenever Celtic supporters do this in the reverse, where we've lost, I just want to say, I think it's hilarious when we beat, you know, let's say Rangers, or it can be anyone, and then people come on to, like, say, on, you know, on forums or social media and go, yeah, well, we hate you. And you're like, that's made my day even better. You know, all you've done is boost what was already a brilliant day. Because if I know that you are currently really angry and upset and I'm getting evidence of it, that's just really funny. Just suck up, accept that you lost. And accept that nothing you do now is actually going to make things better. Coming on at the park and doing that just embarrasses you. Going on to social media and telling your opponents that you're really, really upset. I know that's not the words you're using, but that's the effective thing you're doing. It's just insane. And I never understand the mentality of people.
I know. And the other thing that kind of has got me about it is that there's a real piety about things like that. Now, I don't want to... I know there was... A friend of mine saw an old guy in the Celtic end getting hit with a bottle because they were throwing bottles, like the blooming Kendo Nagasaki Loyal and all that and all their legions. But like, so I don't want to see anybody getting hurt, but there's an element when it's a bit more performative, and most of them were, they ran up because they waited till there was the line of stewards. They ran up to the stewards, like stood at the stewards and then ran back again. So that kind of thing. That
I
kind
used
of
to
thing.
Run schoolboys football, and whenever I see something like that, there's one moment I think of it, and so a team that I was running, it was actually the first time, it was the first game I ever took as a coach, and we were, I taught in a school just at Hamilton, and we were down in Ayr for a Scottish Cup game, and there'd been a bit of, we lost the game, and there'd been a bit of, not really too much, but there'd been a little bit of aggro, and after the game, I was standing away from like the bus that we were on to come down, and I was talking to the teacher from the other school, and that was fine. And I couldn't see the bus physically from where we were. And then I came back round, and in front of the bus, the driver wasn't there either. So there was my boys who were on the bus, and there was this squad of boys from the other school. And they were all standing each other going, come on, we'll take you. And I walked up, and so I said to the other boys, move on, and they're like, F you, and all this sort of stuff. But the thing that was really funny was I said, guys, I says, I'm the first adult here. I said, there's no driver. That door is wide open on the bus. There's basically, you and my, and I told my boys exactly the same. I got them into trouble as well. I says, there's currently about 5 feet separating you, and if you just went 10 feet down, there would be no gap whatsoever. You could get on the bus, they could get off the bus, and neither of you have done it. And I said to one of the boys that was the ringleader, I said, and you're absolutely delighted I've turned up, because you've started getting really loud now that I'm here. you know, you've started being, oh yeah, oh, if that teacher wasn't there, I'd have sorted all of you out. And it was exactly that yesterday. All these big strong men, it's like they always say about, you know, police always say about assassins, you know, you don't worry about people that warn you they're going to kill you. The people you warn about are the people that don't. It's the same there. If some guy's actually going to go for a fight, they're just going to do it. These guys that are, oh, come on, come on, as they practice walking backwards, while they project their voice forwards. Grow up, honest to God.
I thought it was very much a statement by the Union Bears with their Kendo Nagasaki masks. We are going to defend, you know, we are going to defend our land here, and we're going to march up the full length of the pitch to show them. And then they marched, you know, like Duke of York, they marched all the way back down the hill again. It was, as you say, Matthew, I mean, obviously there was some people that were serious, that were injured and things like that, but on the whole, it was completely performative. That we are going to demonstrate that we've gone to defend our honour, and then we'll march away again.
And it's, I think it's also performative the way, and I know this from like 3 decades or more in the media, the way that we react to this. You know, I once wrote a piece about, there was people saying, we don't want to see this. Yes, we kind of do. We do want to see players barneying, and it's like there's a certain kind of snuff film culture that you look at it like the people watch people getting beheaded, and people watch people like beating each other's brains out. They watch car accidents. This is like, I think the Celtic Rangers rivalry is a good example of this. I think it's if that rivalry was a philosopher, it would be Hobbes, because Hobbes believed, unlike a lot of other philosophers, he believed innately, we were driven by our base instincts, that we weren't good people. You know, and he's famous in the Leviathan, you know, his famous line, that, like, which this creates a kind of life scenario, which is nasty, brutish and short. That's his famous line. And this is really, that's the derby. That was that derby yesterday, wasn't it? It was short in the one sense, and it was short in quality, but it was nasty and brutish. But we kind of, that there's some instinct within us. I went to see The Bride on Friday, right? One of the main scenes in The Bride, full of gruesome scenes, is Frankenstein, as he's called in it, right? Christian Bale. He puts a guy's head against the pavement and absolutely, he just smashes his brains out, right? This is what, this is entertainment. See, before The Bride started, there was shorts, there was trailers for 5 films. Every single one of them had a gruesome death in it. They were all horror films. This is what we pay to watch, go to see. So don't let's pretend that we hate all this stuff and throwing up our hands in horror, you know, like clutching our pearls. You know, love this.
And we do sort of revel in the Old Firm as the biggest rivalry and all that stuff.
Which is not, but...
It's not.
But it's actually, more like it when it's yesterday, definitely
but actually, every so often you need that. I'm not saying we want it or it has to happen, but in order to maintain that concept of that brand of it being up there as the world's elite.
As if it's edgy. It needs, if people want to call it edgy, it needs to be edgy. But you know what the result is, by the way? There's not going to be away fans for quite some time.
I thought the interesting thing was, I mean, if you were being cynical, I'll say something in a wee second that you could project towards something. But I am still, look, there's no ambiguity. It was the Rangers fans caused the trouble in the park, which is the one that, you know, has been the focus. I am still, though, and there is an element of, at times, frankly, arseholes in a section of our support. The stuff about 66, you know, talking about the Ibrox disaster, it's just loads.
It was awful.
It actually is. It just, you're just an arsehole.
He's just not a nice, he's just a vile person. There's nothing acceptable.
I really like beating Rangers. I'm really glad. I hope, you know, everybody on, you know, I hope everyone that was wearing blue yesterday went home miserable after a day. But I don't wish them ill. I don't want people to die. And I think if you do, you've got to seriously ask what's gone wrong in your life. Because it's a loathsome, loathsome thing. I think in a wider sense, though, I mean, if I was laying blame, okay, as I say, Celtic Sports shouldn't have been on the park, Rangers Sports shouldn't have tried to start a fight on the park, and those are the two scenarios. They're not the exact same thing. But actually, there's two other ones I blame, and I connect it to. Principally, I blame Rangers, and I blame Rangers officially for the very simple reason. They're the ones that created yesterday being a big day. The reality is, I first went to Ibrox in about 91, 92 or thereabouts. And I would say pretty much for the next 20 years, I missed almost no Celtic games at Ibrox. I've not been back. The last time I was back was Samaras Sunday. You know, there. So literally 15 years ago. That was the last time I was at Ibrox, well, for any game, albeit I drive past it quite regularly. The reality is, I went all the time, and there was never any issue. When you went to Ibrox, there was no big thing. Oh, well, we've got 7,500. Isn't that exciting? Well, no, because that's what we had last time. It's what we had the time before, and it's what we'll have next time. So they have created this issue by firstly saying, well, we don't want away fans at all, and then we'll give you a tiny amount, and okay, we'll negotiate a slight bit more. The simple reality is, if we could go back to 2018, if we had never done this petty thing that they started over, you know, because frankly you're too good and because our fans can't take watching you celebrate, we are cutting the allocation. If yesterday had just been them in the cup, the usual allocation of the Broom one, there wouldn't have been a big deal about it. Nobody would have thought anything. It's only because Rangers have started this thing that, oh yeah, we have to cut the allocation, that it became as a one day the free Broom one, you know, which people wouldn't have thought about. So first and foremost, I think Rangers do, for starting this, for creating the conditions where this was an issue, I think they take a blame. In a wider sense, I also wonder about the policing. A lot happened in the game yesterday. Now again, the police have clearly got, you know, a very simple plan for how to police when 7,500 Celtic fans go to Ibrox, because they did it for decades. And I refuse to believe, I know it's been 7 years now since, or 8 years, whatever it is, since it happened. I don't think anyone's forgotten. Why was the policing notably different from it? Like, in terms of approach to the ground, the gates that were open, the way that people were put in,
Yeah,
that
they
wasn't
policed for
something.
2,500. They didn't need police for the seven and a half
So
thousand.
there was an insanity of the way the police dealt with that. If we're at Hampden, I mean, the funny thing is, it's actually harder to get on the pitch at Hampden because of the nature of the way that, you know, the behind the goals are designed, with the sort of the gates at the front. And yet, if we are playing Rangers at Hampden, there is a line of police that wait to come out. Whereas if there's an incident, they come out to provide a barrier, and they do it at the other end. And yet, on a day where there was more of a tension, on a day where there was a bigger away crowd, I think Brian's point, they policed effectively as though it was like somebody had told them. It was like that, you know, that they thought, well, last week there was 2,500 Celtic fans, it must be that again. We'll just do the same. And it was just, I just say, Celtic fans shouldn't have gone on the park. Rangers fans shouldn't have tried to start a fight on the park. But Rangers for creating the conditions, and the police for the general way they handled it, I think take some of the blame as well.
Which is then why I always think, when situations like this arise, why the narrative very quickly comes out in the police of heavily into blaming both sets of fans. Because they want nobody to point the finger around and go, it's you. That's at
I
all.
watched the match, Commander. I watched their interview. Very unimpressive. Have you watched it? It's
Well,
a
one of
mean
the things that
shot.
struck me is straight away, she says there was one set of fans who
We're celebrating,
it
another
was
set of
euphoria.
fans reacted to that. But then she goes away from that later on. She must have thought, oh, shouldn't have told the truth there.
Because that's exactly, because
Damn
that's
it! I
exactly
said that.
that's
I never
exactly what
put
it
up my
was.
hand and
I
said.
mean, I do think just in a wider bit, and I understand why they've done it, but I saw an interview, I saw Simon Jordan on is it Simon Jordan on TalkSport, who very often is an arsehole, but even a stock clocks twice, correct twice a day. And he's very, I thought he was very sensible on it, saying, you know, all this hand-wringing stuff, and you've got to look at wider issues. It's not the football club's fault per se, you know, in terms of everybody wants to blame Celtic and Rangers, and he's talking about lots of things. I mean, he's talking about how to deal with it. He then asks, why didn't the police arrest people? And Jim White's like, well, because it would start to cause problems, because if you imagine if they waded in, they couldn't arrest 300, 400 of them. And he's like, well, but they could have taken 20, 30 of them. And if they do that, that then immediately sends a message out that you can, you know, because at the moment, our passive policing system for dealing with this seems to be, can stop the incident getting out of control and let it fizzle itself out by just creating a barrier. Now, I understand that, but that's then going to lead to that thing that you talked about, Matthew, where it's now the done thing that people come onto the field to play from the terraces when there is a last minute goal, last minute winner. I mean, I did a quick Google. Partick Thistle fans did it against Falkirk last season. You know,
Absolutely.
it's not, you know,
It's at every
you.
level. Dunfermline did it against Aberdeen. Every level. It's just
Yeah.
everywhere. It's that's the done thing.
So
you don't
they had
jump about in the stands.
Getting back to cricket, Andrew, they had a problem in Australia that increasingly people were getting on the field of play. They then made it a criminal offence to enter the field of play. People going on the field of play in cricket in Australia stopped overnight when they made it a criminal offence. If the police, for me, I mean, maybe that's a bit, because you've got to be wary that you, but it certainly should be a criminal offence to open, to enter the field of play with a complete face covering on. Surely that's a fairly straightforward first step you could do. And then the police then just have got the ability. You're on the field of
especially
play.
Especially if it's Lycra and light blue, because it looks bloody awful, like in anybody's book.
But the police can then just go, right, you away. And if they start lifting 10, 20 of them, as you pointed out, Matthew, about the false bravado of them, they'll soon bugger off back up to the Copeland stand.
Imagine it goes the other way and the fans try to kettle the police, as it were. I mean, did you see the guy tripping the policewoman? The guy from the Rangers end tripping the policewoman. I mean, imagine having the gall to do that. That's a policewoman as well.
But actually, I mean, one of my friends who, as I say, I mean, I go to all the home games. I used to go to all the away games. One of my friends still goes to all the away games. His, like, he's gone on about this for ages, and I do agree, and I sort of joke. He says, the other issue that's not really spoken about yesterday, some of yesterday, including Celtic supporters doing stuff they shouldn't be doing, and Rangers fans, actually, there's a big issue in Scottish football with cocaine.
Yeah,
that is a
huge.
major. I mean, I have to say, I mean, I always joke, but I always feel guilty when I go to the toilet at Celtic Park, because I feel guilty having a piss in the cocaine room, because, you know, given the number of boys that, you know, like, I mean, there's either a lot of very, very close personal relationships, and, you know, where they feel comfortable going into a cubicle together, or alternatively, guys, but the sheer number of guys, and especially the odd away game that I still go to, there's no doubts about it that you see guys, and it's quite open. I mean, the last time I was at Pittodrie, which was a couple of years ago, in the sort of, you know, the porta cabin toilets, you know, that are outside, and there was guys just sniffing coke. Not even in the cubicle. They had it lined up like at the sort of the window's edge, and they were just sniffing lines because they didn't feel they knew there wasn't going to be any police, so they didn't have to worry about that. And it does just make them mental, and it's how you get to a lot of the problems comes from this. And that, again, to go on McBrien's point, that is a societal issue, because it isn't just in football that the prevalence of cocaine is a huge problem.
That was after Rangers were in Manchester last season, and then we were in Birmingham at Villa, Manchester police made some statement about they'd never encountered the volume of cocaine taken amongst away supporters as they'd seen amongst the Rangers fans, and wondered if Glasgow had been emptied of all cocaine that weekend. And apparently the Birmingham police had said the same thing about our supporters. And I know someone who's in amongst our supporters. People were taking it off the back of their mobile phone and all that type of stuff. They said it was really, like, they go to a lot of away games and said it was really bad. I actually remember, don't know if I'm speaking out of turn now, going to a meeting with Peter Lowell and a couple of other, when he was just dipping his toe in the water of fan media stuff. And he was talking about...
So you mean dipping into his rap, you know?
He was talking about one of the challenges of stuff, and he said, his big thing was always, as you just pointed out, people blame football clubs for society's ills. And he said, so for example, the biggest challenge we've got with away support trouble is cocaine. He said, but our problem is, if I go and talk about that, no other club wants to talk about it. So suddenly it'll become Celtic, because the other clubs don't want to join in the chat. And then the minute it becomes Celtic, then it becomes me saying our supporters are junkies. Mm-hmm. That's how it'll be portrayed in the press. So it's a real, he was talking about it's a real problem to talk about it, because nobody wants to be the first club that breaks the ranks and says, this is a problem, because then it becomes football's problem, because society, the chattering classes, chattering political classes love to be able to package stuff up and say, oh, it's not society, it's big bad football's fault. They love doing that. But you're right,
yeah,
I mean, that's
somebody
that's one of the issues.
Told me, Matthew, as you're saying, they said that they did a kind of dusting the toilets, 90% of the toilets, the traces of cocaine.
Absolutely.
I remember somebody telling me at Celtic about a fight breaking out. I'm very fortunate. I sit amongst very old people of my age and above.
Well, I do, thankfully.
But he was telling me about...
I sat amongst myself.
There was a fight broke out in a toilets where a guy had gone in and people were doing stuff and he just ignored them, carried on himself, and then had gone and used the hand dryer and it had blown away. Blown away somebody's line, and the fight had broken out. The fight had broken out because the guy had then walloped the guy who'd used the hand dryer. I do also think social media has a thing of every single person who went on the pitch was taking a selfie to show that they were on the pitch. Well, not every single one, but a large number of them were taking selfies, and it was so that they can get their, you know, 15 minutes of fame of, look at me, I'm on the pitch, which then reverts back to the, they weren't there to be, look at me, I'm giving the finger to the Rangers fans. It was, look at me, I'm with a Celtic player on the pitch, which adds to the one team was there for euphoria and one team was there for trouble. Yeah. Anyway.
Right.
Before we're through.
By the way,
yes.
I'm just going to say this as a wee advert and I'll put it in the thing, but I'm wearing my Celtic walking
tour. Well, I see that.
Yes.
First match day pub walk of the season is this Saturday. So still got two or three spaces if people are interested. I'll put a wee thing in the chat, but free to come along. You know, you can look, as I say, if you're listening to the podcast, you can do that. But yeah, if anybody wants to come along Saturday morning, so learn a bit of Celtic history, visit a couple of pubs, and then hopefully go and see Celtic final.
So did they just come along and turn up, or do they need to email you, or
they'll have to email me. As I say, I'll put a link in and everything in the into the chat and all the rest of it in terms of booking it. But either that or just visit Twitter at Hail Hail History and you can get the thing.
You got there. A great night for the last Friday, I think, did you?
It was absolutely brilliant, yeah. Beautiful weather. I'm not so sure about this Saturday, but...
No, it's going to be shit. According to the weather forecast I saw last night, it's going to be shit for about the next fortnight, so...
Was it? God.
Anyway. We all need to go.
We're not going to feel it, at least until Saturday, we're walking on air.
We all need to... No, there's nothing quite like it. We all need to go. There is nothing better. As I always go on about Danny Baker talking about, there's nothing better than a last-minute winner, unless it's a last-minute... VAR ruled this one out. Unless it's a last-minute winner that you then find out was chopped off or offside. And I don't know if there's even anything better than a game where you've been the lesser, you know, the inferior side for the majority of the game at your opposition, your main rival's ground, to then win on penalties. At their end of the ground. You know, we're enclosed on three sides by them.
It was so many advantages that they were like piling on top of one another, and Rangers, they just got all rubbled by events.
And with that, I will say, boys, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.